Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to the program that helps you learn and improve your American English. At the same time, we talk about important events around the world. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. Today, we look back at one of the most important stories of 2014, the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Then, we will hear about Calculator 28. It's a new idea from Africa that helps to prevent unwanted pregnancies. So get ready. Here is part one. The pro-European revolution in Ukraine was one of the big stories of this year. Ukraine replaced its pro-Russia president with leaders interested in reaching out to the rest of Europe. But a short time later, Ukraine lost control of the Crimean Peninsula to Russia, and the Russian government continues to support pro-Russia rebels in Ukraine's east. Many people are worried the country will remain weak or conditions will worsen in the weeks to come. As we hear from Bob Doty, some political observers say the Russian actions are a threat to both Russia and Ukraine.
The leaders of Ukraine recently marked the anniversary of the country's Euromaidan revolution, not with celebration, but as a serious event. 1 year has passed since the start of protests that led to the ouster of President Viktor Yanukovych. Family members of protesters killed in the clashes have yet to see justice. And thousands of people have died in fighting with pro-Russian rebels in the east. The fighting has been a major concern for Ukraine's new leaders. Yuri Yekumenko is with the Razumkov Center in the capital, Kiev. He says that for the first time in the independent history of Ukraine, we are in a state of war against the biggest aggressor. We can even say adversary. We should call it like it is. But most Ukrainians say the sacrifice for a European future is worth it. Valentina Bilan was among the protesters in Kiev. She says, "We've elected a parliament. Let's hope that it will work. Everything will be fine in time. We will remember my words. I went through the Orange Revolution. The scariest thing after revolution is that people should not be disappointed." The fighting has also moved attention away from economic and political reforms in Ukraine and Russia. Conditions in both countries are getting worse. Yuri Pivovarov is with Russia's Academy of Sciences. He says the decision of President Vladimir Putin to expand into Ukraine is a threat to Russia's democratic successes. He says the war in Ukraine is also a war in Russia. "In Russia," says Mr. Pivovarov, "the whole government is warring against people who oppose Russia's policies or have a different opinion." Dmitry Trenin is director of the Carnegie Moscow Center. He says there appears to be little interest in a much-needed compromise between Russia and Ukraine,
particularly in the West, because any compromise at this point will be seen as a concession to Putin. And this is totally unacceptable. But if that's the case, then the only exit out of it should be the collapse of the regime here. And since this is how it is more or less read in the Kremlin, this raises the stakes enormously high for Russia.
Ukraine's leaders will have a lot of work in the months ahead. They will seek to deal with a Russia that is becoming more powerful. At the same time, they will have to reform the corrupt political culture that led to the Euromaidan Revolution. I'm Bob Doty.
You are listening to VOA, and we are coming to you from Washington. Cameroon has become the seventh African country to begin using a program called Calculator 28. The program calculates, helps to predict, the period when a woman is most fertile. This information can help women avoid unwanted pregnancies. We get more on the story from Marcia James.
Belinda Yeyan was just 15 years old when she got pregnant last year. She says she was not ready to have a baby or the emotional pain that comes with being an unmarried schoolgirl.
I don't even want to remember what happened. I gave birth, and 2 days after, I was sent back home with no follow-up of what was happening to my child. The child got sick and passed away. I'm almost traumatized because of this act.
The World Health Organization says an estimated 222 million women in developing countries would like to delay or stop having children. But it says these women are not using any contraception or method of birth control. Paul Frank Njejek Gonjau is from Gabon. He developed a new tool to help women better understand their bodies and fertility.
40% of girls and women don't know how to calculate their menstrual cycle. And also, one-third women have the first babies before 18 years old.
He developed the Calculator 28 to help identify ovulation, the fertile time in a woman's monthly cycle. The application program can be used on a mobile telephone or as part of a set or kit. Tumasang Florence is an expert on female reproductive issues. She works at the Yaoundé Central Hospital in Cameroon. She says the Calculator 28 can have a big effect in Africa, where there is a great need to give more information about and control to women over their bodies.
L'importance de ce projet, c'est parce qu'on a des problèmes de planning familial. La plupart des femmes ne connaissent pas ce qu'on appelle le cycle menstruel. La plupart des femmes ne connaissent pas.
She says Africa has serious family planning problems. A majority of women do not know what a reproductive cycle is. And she says 40% of those who do know are unable to remember the last date of their period, leading to unwanted pregnancies. Calculator 28 is based on a short message or text messaging service. It can also be offered as a kit to women without mobile phones. It shows them how to calculate their reproductive cycle and receive information on their fertile and unsafe periods for sex. Paul Frank Njejek Gonjau says his project is off to a good start, but he says he would like to raise enough money to offer Calculator 28 to women across Africa. Women are not the only ones interested in the program. So are some men. Eugene Paul Ndama says he did not plan 4 of his wife's 9 pregnancies, and he wishes they had such a tool. He says Calculator 28 could be good for many schools and communities to help young people prevent pregnancy before they are ready to become parents. Paul Frank Njejek Gonjau says more attention should be given to family planning. He notes a United Nations report shows that without better planning, 40% of the 2 billion children to be born in Africa before 2035 would come from unwanted pregnancies. I'm Marcia James.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. This is VOA, the Voice of America.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. Can eating a chocolate bar every day really prevent age-related memory loss? No. Can eating chocolate cake for breakfast, lunch, and dinner be good for your heart? Again, the answer is no. That would be too good to be true. But new research shows that large amounts of flavanols, substances found in cocoa, tea, and some vegetables, may reverse age-related memory failure. Another study is looking to see if high levels of cocoa flavanols can help prevent heart attacks and strokes. Flavanols found in dark chocolate are known to increase blood flow in the part of the brain that controls memory. They also help prevent heart disease by lowering blood pressure and bad cholesterol. A new study published online in Nature Neuroscience found that cocoa flavanols reverse minor memory loss in older adults. A company that makes chocolate helped to pay for the study. Dr. Scott Small is a professor of neurology at Columbia University in New York City. He is the lead writer of a research paper describing the effects of cocoa flavanols on brain activity. The study involved 37 volunteers, aged between 50 and 69. Researchers gave them a high-level flavanol drink made from cocoa beans, or a low-level flavanol drink. For a period of 3 months, some subjects got 900 milligrams of flavanol a day. The others got 10 milligrams of flavanol each day. Brain imaging and memory tests were given to each subject before and after the study. Dr. Small says that the subjects who had the high-level flavanol drink showed much improvement on memory tests. The researchers warn that more work is needed because this study was performed on a small group. Researchers at Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, Massachusetts, recently announced plans to do just that. Dr. Joanne Manson is the lead researcher of a 4-year study involving 18,000 adults. This study will use flavanol capsules. The study subjects will be divided into 2 groups and will take 2 pills a day. The capsules will all look the same, but one group's capsules will contain flavanols. The other group will take capsules made of an inactive substance, or placebo. Dr. Manson says that a person would have to eat 10 times a normal amount to get the flavanols in just one flavanol pill.
The amount of chocolate that it would take in order to have this amount of cocoa flavanols would be more than 10 times the amount that people would ordinarily eat.
Dr. Small says a cocoa-based flavanol extract may be developed in the future. I'm Anna Mateo.
Thank you. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Fritzi Bodenheimer with Explorations in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about one of the most important scientific discoveries of the last century, the development of HeLa cells. Reporter Rebecca Skloot explores this in her book, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. The book is a history of science, professional morals, and the human story behind a famous line of cells.
For much of his career, a researcher at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Maryland, had been working to find a way to grow human cells outside the body. George Guy and his team of researchers wanted to grow cancer cells in a laboratory. They believed scientists could study this illness to understand its causes and find a cure. Dr. Guy tested many different human cells in many kinds of liquid, but the cells always died quickly. However, one day in 1951, his search came to an end. Cancer cells from a patient at the university's hospital were more than just surviving. These cells were growing faster than anyone had ever seen before. Dr. Guy discussed his findings with other scientists. He provided them with some of these HeLa cells to use in their own research. He began giving the cells to researchers across the country, free of charge. Soon, scientists in labs around the world were using these cells. Later, the production of this line of cells by companies would grow into an industry worth millions of dollars.
This kind of cell line is called immortal. This means the cells can keep growing and reproducing indefinitely. Normal cells reproduce for a limited time before dying. For the first time, scientists around the world had a limitless number of cells they could use to test the effects of diseases, medicines, and chemicals. Jonas Salk used these HeLa cells to test the first vaccine for polio. HeLa cells have gone to the moon to test the effect of zero gravity. They have been used to study cancer, AIDS, genetic testing, and drugs for illnesses including influenza, herpes, and Parkinson's disease. And these HeLa cells are still being made, sold, and used in research today. One scientist estimated that if all the HeLa cells ever grown were gathered together, they would weigh more than 50 million metric tons.
At this point, you may be wondering just where these famous HeLa cells came from. The first clue is in the name HeLa. The cells were taken from the cervix of a woman named Henrietta Lacks. The word HeLa uses the first two letters of her first and last name. Henrietta Lacks was an African-American woman who was a cancer patient at Johns Hopkins University Hospital. These cells were taken from her tumor without her knowledge or permission. Henrietta Lacks died of cancer in 1951, leaving behind a husband and five children.
It was not until the 1970s that Henrietta Lacks' family learned that her cells had been taken and used by scientists. Learning about the existence of these HeLa cells was an emotional and difficult experience for the family. For the scientist who used these cells, HeLa was just a name. But for the family, Henrietta Lacks was a real person whose absence they continue to feel deeply. It was also not easy for the family to accept that her cells had fueled an industry worth millions of dollars. Yet the Lacks family had very little money, education, or health insurance.
Henrietta Lacks' husband and children found out about the experiment done on her when scientists contacted them. The scientists wanted to do research on the family to learn more about the HeLa cells. The scientists conducted this research without their informed permission. The case of Henrietta Lacks brings up several moral issues. Henrietta Lacks did not give her permission for the cells to be taken from her tumor. And the question remains whether her family had a legal or moral right to receive payment after something of monetary value was made from their mother's cells.
Rebecca Skloot is a science reporter. She first learned about HeLa cells in a biology class when she was 16 years old. She became very interested in Henrietta Lacks and wanted to know more about her life. But there was almost no information about the person behind these famous cells. Years later, Ms. Skloot began research for a book about Henrietta Lacks, her cells, and their influence on medical and scientific history. The book would take her 10 years to research and write. She interviewed many doctors, scientists, lawyers, reporters, and experts on medical ethics. She also became very close friends with the Lacks family. Rebecca Skloot tells this complex story by going back and forth between subjects and time periods. Her book involves three stories. One is an explanation of science, medicine, and professional morality. Another is the story of Henrietta Lacks' life. And the third is the reporter's story, as she becomes close to the Lacks' children and helps them learn more about their mother's influence on medical science.
One storyline in the immortal life of Henrietta Lacks is like a history lesson. Rebecca Skloot explains about scientific and medical developments. Readers can better understand how informed consent and the question of morality in medical experiments have changed over time. Today, there are laws in the United States that protect a patient receiving medical treatment. Doctors are required to fully inform a patient about his or her illness. The patient must agree to any treatment. But this practice of informed consent is relatively new.
In 1951, Henrietta Lacks did agree to be treated for her cervical cancer. But she was not told that a doctor had taken cells from her body for testing. Rebecca Skloot points out that this was not an unusual medical practice during this period. Johns Hopkins Hospital provided care for poor people who could not pay for medical treatment. She says the common belief among doctors at the time was that they could use their patients in their research in exchange for free treatment.
Rebecca Skloot discusses several well-known cases where doctors failed to use moral judgment. One famous example is the Tuskegee Syphilis Study, which began in the 1930s. The United States Public Health Service and Tuskegee Institute in Alabama studied the effects of the disease syphilis on a group of poor African-American men. The men were not fully told why they were being studied or what tests were being done to them. Later, when penicillin was widely available, the researchers denied the men the drug that could have cured their illness. The study lasted for 40 years. Most of the men died from syphilis or problems from the disease. The study was finally shut down after an employee told a reporter about the experiment. The reporter then informed the public.
Rebecca Skloot also did careful research to describe Henrietta Lacks. She writes about Henrietta's childhood on a tobacco farm in Virginia, her marriage, and her move to Baltimore, Maryland. She learned from Henrietta's friends that she loved to dance and to paint her fingernails and toenails red. Miss Skloot had a difficult time gaining the trust of the Lacks family, but she slowly became friends with the family, especially Henrietta's daughter, Deborah. She helped the family understand the importance of the HeLa cells and accept that the scientific community has gained so much from their use. Rebecca Skloot says the Lacks family tested everything she thought she knew about faith, science, reporting, and race. Ms. Skloot says her book is a result of what she learned along the way.
Rebecca Skloot has established an organization called the Henrietta Lacks Foundation. She has donated some of the money she has earned from the book to the organization. The aim of the foundation is to provide money for family members of Henrietta Lacks. The money will help them get a good education and health care insurance, things that Henrietta herself never had. Rebecca Skloot says she hopes that scientific companies that have gained from HeLa cells will give back to the family whose ancestor changed the history of medicine.
This program was written and produced by Dana Demange. I'm Fritzi Bodenheimer.
And I'm Steve Ember. You can comment on this program on our website, voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for Explorations in VOA Special English.